And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I don't know if you've checked the forecast, but it is supposed to rain today. So if you have it checked, just be aware that it may rain today. A lot of you may be surprised by that, but that is the case. Hate to be the bearer of bad news. Darren McFarlane, that's me. Willie Donick?
Hello.
That's him. Josh Upton behind the glass. He's waving everybody. Yeah, in all seriousness, it's going to rain all day again today. All day again tomorrow. What a weenie winter. Like, this winter should be ashamed of itself. Like, how? You got punked by spring. Like, this wasn't even winter. This was just fall to spring. You got punked by spring.
Hey, come on. Don't start the show like this.
It's Friday.
It's Friday.
I know.
Don't do this. Let's have fun.
School is out for rain?
Some schools are out.
There's a lot of schools out. For rain? In February? What?
Don't even get me started on that. I don't get that. Our city needs to be able to handle rain and not close the schools. Rain.
Well, flooding. It's flooding. It's not rain. It's big puddles of water.
Metro schools, we can't get to the schools.
Like your basement. Do you have any water in your basement?
No. We're okay. We're okay.
Good. Well, hey, our mood's better than Pittsburgh and San Jose last night. Whew. What's going to be the fallout from that?
Pittsburgh, San Jose?
Mm-hmm.
I saw San Jose beat them.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, literally... And maybe you could say that.
Wait a minute. What did I miss?
Literally and literally.
What did I miss?
Mike Sullivan getting tossed. Crosby sucker punching Dylan. Kane.
Ooh.
I mean, a huge melee at the end of the game.
Now, wait a minute. Why didn't they play this on the NHL Network highlights that I saw?
I don't know.
They kind of skipped that.
It was a mess because just like winter got punked by spring in this market, Penguins got punked at home by the Sharks.
They did get punked by the Sharks. They were down 3-0 early.
And they didn't like it. And so Crosby got mad. He started whining a little bit, and then he sucker punched Dylan. So will the league do anything to Crosby? Probably not.
But you know who's having a hearing today, perhaps? Mr. McDavid.
Yes. And that seems to be
serious. And who's coming into town on Monday?
Mm-hmm. That would be a shame, though. Honestly, I don't want him to be out.
I don't know if I want him to be out, but I'm saying...
You want to see one of the best in the league, right? I mean, he's a...
Well, yeah, but...
He's a draw.
He'll be in here again.
Who else do you want to watch if Edmonton doesn't bring Connor McDavid?
I get that. I get that.
It's just...
But, you know, I'd like
Edmonton.
To, like to win.
I understand, but, you know, this just in, Edmonton's not very good with him, so you should beat him with him.
Well, and sometimes when a guy's out like that, you let your guard down, you're like, oh, we got this, and then you get beat 4-0. That does happen sometimes.
Yeah.
And everybody freaks out.
Mm-hmm. That was a good win last night. Predators beat Los Angeles. They should have beat Los Angeles at home, so they've strung together a couple of wins. Colorado tomorrow afternoon at 4:30. Yeah, a 4:30 start, pregame at 3:30, and the Avs come to town. And the Avs, who've been one of the surprise stories again 2 years in a row, but this time it's for the opposite reason. Last year was the surprise of, wow, Colorado's pretty good. Wow, that first line's really good. This year, wow, that first line's still really good, but, man, Colorado isn't very good. What happened? You know, we thought they were going to be the team.
They're not done yet.
On the right. I didn't say they're done. I said, well, what were we talking about last year in the first round of the playoffs and the offseason coming into the season? Wow. Okay, if they can shore up some things on the back, like, and they're young,
yes,
they should take that even next step. Like, Colorado is going to be probably around for a while. They're going to take the next step, and they'll be even better.
But what did we say? Who is the goalie?
Yep.
And they have not answered that question. But – they are still dangerous. They've won a couple here. Now, an intriguing part of this is Colorado, and I'll guarantee you hear this, they'll be careful on how they say it because nobody wants to sound like they're whining and making excuses. But they play tonight in Chicago in a massive game. Both of those teams have 61 points. They got to go to the United Center tonight and then turn around and play 4:30 here tomorrow. I'm sure they're going, who did that? Who made that part of scheduling? That game doesn't start till 7:30 tonight.
Yeah. That is not kind scheduling.
So, anyway, I mean, if you're the Predators, you can't – the shoe is on the other foot sometimes. So, sometimes you face sort of unfair scheduling. Everybody gets hit with it at one point or another. But Colorado has got a challenge tonight. That's going to be a heck of a game to watch. Two teams that could really rev it up offensively, Colorado and Chicago. That's worth watching tonight. And also, the Jets are in Vegas to take on the Golden Knights. How about that?
That should be a good one.
Golden Knights, they've struggled some.
They have not been good at home. They've been losing a lot of home games. Other than beating the Predators Saturday, they went right back to losing again at home.
It was a good game. They could have won that game. They lost in a shootout to Boston. Boston has been absolutely
right, but I'm saying they've lost
awesome.
6 of 7 at home.
I know.
When you think about all the success they had last year at home.
But they played a good game against Boston. Boston is just playing so well right now. That'll be interesting because the Jets have not played well, and they're going into what we know is a hornet's nest, even though they haven't been winning there. So that'll be fun to watch.
All right, I want to ask you what your thoughts are when you hear this from head coach Peter Laviolette last night after the win.
Part of it is we're dealing with some stuff inside the room, and so it was an opportunity to take a look at that tonight for me, and I thought that it would give Kevin a chance up with Joey and Phil. I thought that moving Arv down there, there's just some lines that we haven't tried, and just trying to see what those combinations might be able to do. So I thought that it was good because we were able to generate some offense. I thought the game was...
Okay, that was Peter Laviolette when he was asked about switching up the lines and moving Victor Arvidsson down to the second line. But it was really about, because Kevin Fiala was up on the first line, it was about that very first, can you play that very first part again? I want to know what you, when you hear this, what do you think that means?
Part of it is we're dealing with some stuff inside the room. And so
you know Peter Laviolette is very, very calculated in his words. He knows exactly what he's going to say, okay, like a lot of coaches. So he didn't flippantly just throw that out there. He knew what he was saying, and so he threw that out there. And so it has a lot of people wondering, what did he mean by that? Now, there's all kinds of ways you can go with this, but I'm asking you, what do you think he meant by, well, we've got some stuff going on in the room?
Well, I might disappoint you with my answer because I hear him use that term a lot with us. We're dealing with some stuff inside the room. What that means to me is some guys are sick, some guys are banged up. Craig Smith went on the injured list.
Mm-hmm.
Victor Arvidsson missed the morning skate for one reason or another. I don't know why, but I was pleasantly surprised to see him in there because I wasn't sure he was going to play. So I think they made a game plan. Plan A was Victor Arvidsson is in. Plan B is Victor Arvidsson is not in. So I think they constructed that first line with the idea that Victor Arvidsson may not play. And so that's why Fiala was up on that line.
Mattias Ekholm was out Thursday. You had the Craig Smith late scratch. Mattias Ekholm missed one game with an illness. I guess what I'm asking is, okay, so they've dealt with injuries and especially this time of year, sicknesses a lot. I mean, this is what happens. I don't recall Peter Laviolette saying we're dealing with stuff in the room. You saying that's wrong? He does say that all the time because I don't hear that.
I don't know about all the time. He said that a lot. That's a term that I've heard him use a lot, not necessarily in the scrum. It might be in a conversation we have.
Okay. Because I know I'm not crazy because there were other people
I know his terminology.
That felt the same way as me last night.
I know. And I don't blame people for seeing that because he doesn't use that often in the post-game stuff. Now, could it be, you know, if everybody's trying to peek in and say, well, is there like inside the room, meaning what, trade deadline stuff? Is that what people are speculating? I don't know. I didn't read it like that.
Well, you can go a variety of ways. I mean, you can – Hal said last night in postgame, it can mean wet towels on the floor. It can mean, you know, some people aren't deodorizing properly. You know?
not hitting the laundry basket with your socks.
Exactly. They don't have the logo issue anymore, right?
You you can't tramp on the logo anymore.
Can't do that anymore.
Yeah. Got rid of that.
But in all seriousness, why else would people be a flutter about Peter Laviolette saying that last night?
I think, honestly, I would tell you otherwise if I thought he was really being calculated and trying to send that out for public consumption. I don't think there is issues in the locker room, meaning like chemistry issues. I don't think that that's the case. I think it was you're dealing with Craig Smith going on the injured list. I think they made that decision sometime during the day. They also had to make the decision, is Victor Arvidsson in? You also have to construct your lineup accordingly. And so I think they probably left the building from the morning skate not exactly knowing who was going to play, who wasn't going to play. I think that's what he meant. Only because I've heard him use that term to us sometimes when I'm asking him, is there a lineup the same? He'll say dealing with some stuff.
You and Mace talk to him before every game for TV purposes. Pete Weber speaks with him before every game for radio purposes. So I am asking you because, you have a lot more dealings with him than I do. But I also know that you're not going to catch him. You're not going to surprise him with a question. That question didn't surprise him. And so there's a reason he said that. Now, maybe it's what you said. Actually, he says it a lot. Maybe it's more privately, not publicly. But it did catch a lot of people off guard. I even caught it and went, huh, that's interesting.
Oh, I noticed it when
he
said it.
And then I saw a bunch of people saying stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm not crazy. Because at first I'm like, does he say that all the time? And I haven't caught that. And then when I saw a lot of people asking the same question or probably tilting their head a little bit when they heard that too, that I knew that I wasn't crazy for having that thought.
Well, I will give you an example. All right. And this would be a conversation that might take place, and it might take place with the NBC guys too if it's an NBC game. They might say, well, coach, do you know who are the lines the same or something like that? He can choose to answer that any way he wants, right? He can say, I can't tell you what my line is right now. He might share it with us. He may not, depending. And he has used that term before. We're dealing with some stuff. I can't tell you what it is, but we're dealing with some stuff. You'll have to wait and see what the lineup is tonight. I'm just saying that is a term that he has used before. So that's why I would not read too much into what he's saying there. And I read it to be they didn't know whether Victor Arvidsson was going to play tonight. I even asked the NBC guys tonight. I said, "What did he tell you anything about Arvidsson?" And he said, "No." And that's why. So I heard Alex Faust, who is the Kings announcer who did the game for NBC last night. He said he used the term "game time decision" for Victor Arvidsson.
Can we get your chair fixed? Because I don't want to look down at you like you're like sitting on the floor. And I'm sitting way up here. I don't want to do this for 4 hours. Like, my neck is already starting to hurt. Can we get a chair that has normal size in the studio?
It's a comfortable chair.
I feel like you're sitting Indian style on the floor. So my neck's starting. Josh, can we?
Native American style.
Yeah. Oh, Native American style. Excuse me. Thank you. You are from Washington, so that's probably a sensitive subject, being a Redskins fan. We'll come back. He logged his career win 800 last night on the campus of Belmont. We'll talk to Rick Bird next. Our next guest has won 800 more basketball games as a head coach than the two of us. We go over to the campus of Belmont. Bruins head coach Rick Bird is on the line with us. Rick, good morning. How you doing?
Morning. Good. How are you all?
Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Is all the confetti out of the locker room? Who's on the cleanup duty for that?
Not me. I don't know. I didn't have anything to do with starting it, so I'm not going to finish it.
I got to be honest. Right now, you should have won last night. Your team should have won. You can't golf, so the only thing you can concentrate on is basketball.
too much rain right now.
There's no danger of you getting out of the office anytime soon. So what did it mean? Obviously, you guys took care of business at home, 99-58 over Eastern Illinois. Saw some really cool responses on Twitter from Calipari, Rick Barnes. I mean, the list goes on and on and on of people congratulating you on career win 800. What does it mean to you, Rick? I know you're not finished. I'm just saying here today, you get to celebrate 800. What does it mean to have all these people say congrats and to have that accomplishment?
Well, it's hard to put in words. I think the part of it, I guess if I can say it this way, that's far more meaningful than the basketball side is the appreciation for things that I think should always be a part of our game, and that's just sportsmanship, humility, having kids that represent your school in a first-class way. I guess it's just nice that that's a part of every message that I've gotten almost, and because it's more important than the wins, in my opinion.
Do you remember your first ever win?
I know who it was against. I can't remember anything about it. It was against St. Andrews College from North Carolina. I was the head coach at Maryville College. I can't remember. We must have been 0-4, 0-5 before we won it. We went on to a great start of 2-13. and 800 wins or even games was not nearly in the thought process at that point.
You weren't thinking, man, 799 more to 800.
No, I was thinking about what else I could do for a living.
A fallback plan.
Is that when the golf started?
No, I knew pretty early on that wasn't going to pay anything either.
What are you most proud of to this point in your career?
Well, that's if you're supposed to be humble, that's a hard question to answer, because it's something that I think that those kind of things are people that other people kind of decide for you. But I'd go back to the answer before is I just decided early on in my coaching career that we'd have standards in our program. And a lot of those, most of those would have to do it outside the basketball floor and the kind of kids I wanted to represent all the schools where I've coached, and that those guys play and act on and off the court in a fashion that represents the institution in a positive way. And there are a lot of coaches, I think, it's fair to say, that don't think that you can also win games doing it that way. So I guess if I have to answer that question, it's sort of the combination of those two things, trying to be first class and all that we do and still winning on top of that.
Rick Bird on the line with us. I was looking at really outside of your game. I know there were a couple of others, but really outside of your game, there were – some close call. I mean, there were a lot of one-point finishes last night, one-point games. Jacksonville State won by a point. Eastern Kentucky won by a point. Tennessee State, unfortunately, lost by a point. The conference looks really good this year. It looks like there's some teams that are really challenging at the top. You know, we've talked so much about you guys and Murray over the years, but there's some other formidable opponents this year. Should be a fun tournament in Evansville.
Well, I think that there certainly appears to be four teams that have separated themselves, and I see very little difference in those four teams besides Murray and hopefully us than Austin Peay and Jacksonville State. I mean, can't forget that our two losses are both to Jacksonville State.
Yeah.
And it's going to make for a pretty interesting tournament, but you're right. I mean, Morehead State went to Jacksonville State and lost by a point. Eastern Illinois has beaten Austin Peay. And Eastern Kentucky and Martin have beaten Jacksonville State. So it's, it certainly could be set for some upsets to happen. But I think the four teams at the top represent the best, most competitive group since we've been in the LVC.
Rick, you've seen this Ja Morant kid. Obviously, there's been a lot of praise about him, a lot of people talking about him being a lottery pick. When you faced him, what did you see out of him? I know you guys beat him at their place.
Yeah, and he got hurt early in the game and kind of tweaked his ankle. He played pretty much the rest of the way, and no way for me to know how that effect was. I think mostly it's what did we see going in of him, and he's got a unique ability to find teammates. I think he has as good a vision as a passer, with also the ability to get it to the goal and score and or get fouled as anybody we've played against since we've been in Division One. And he's improved his shooting. I think he's still shooting about 33% from three, and I would think at the NBA level that he needs to continue to work on that. He's slight of build, but those guys know way more than I do about what they need in that league, and they obviously are sold on him. He's a very, very hard guy to guard, very hard to guard and keep in front of you.
Rick Bird is with us, Belmont head basketball coach. They are 22-4, and they are moving on towards another run at perhaps a chance to play for the NCAA tournament. He won his 800th game last night. Coach, I want to ask you about a couple of points in time in your career. You mentioned your first year, and of course, for people that may be new to Nashville, back then you guys were in the NAIA, and Lipscomb had become a powerhouse, and you guys rose up to a level to where that became the rivalry that it is today when you guys were in the same league. I want you to go sort of back in those days when, yeah, as you transitioned with some guys that turned the program as it was when you got it into a powerhouse nationally in the NAIA. What were some of the keys to maybe taking it to the level? Because as you said, you had a vision, you made up your mind what kind of team you wanted to have, and obviously you wanted to be successful, and Lipscomb had set a pretty high bar.
Well, you're right. And when I took this job in March of 1986, Lipscomb was in the process of winning a national championship in the NAIA, and pretty much had established that program as the best in the NAIA. So pretty daunting task to face the people down the road being the best in the country. But I've said many times that whether Lipscomb fans like it or not, they deserve a lot of credit for where our program has become, as well as Trevec at the time was an NAIA power. That first year I was here, they went to the Final Eight in the NAIA tournament. So we had to beat two local teams. We had to get better and be able to compete with those two teams. And had we not had Lipscomb in town, then I don't know where our program would be, because you just have to try to climb to that level. And if it was an average league or below average league, maybe we'd have just done enough to compete near the top of that league, and we never would have been a national contender. So that's the start of it all. I mean, you just don't want to lose to the people down the road. They don't want to lose to us. Maybe we've helped their Division I program in the opposite way. That's the way things happen. Duke and North Carolina are both pretty good. They're going to stay pretty good. They don't want to fall below the other one.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. And that leads me to the next stage of this whole process that I find pretty interesting. I can remember when you guys were making that transition from NAIA to Division I. You guys did it a few years before Lipscomb did, and you weren't allowed to play. You had to find a league, first of all. Then you had to go through the process of being eligible to play in the postseason. I'm looking back at a year, and I just went as far back as the KenPom website would lead me. 2002, you guys were 11-17 that year. And then a couple years later, you're up to the standard of winning 20 games and being right there for a conference championship. But those guys that led you through the transition, I can think back, those were key guys, right? Because you guys proved, even though you didn't win right away, that you could hang with the Division I teams.
Yeah, actually our second year we were 14-13, I think, and really made some strides. And then we just backed up for a year and had a really bad season. But I think I think the class of the two guys that are the most significant as a twosome are Steve Graben and Adam Mark, coming from Indiana and bringing a real serious basketball mentality to the team. And in the class before that, Adam Son, local product who has become a very good high school coach, ended up being player of the year for us. So you throw him into the mix with those guys and the guys around them, and that's the 2004 senior team with Steve Draven and Adam Mark, that where we actually earned a bid to the NIT. We didn't, in those days, you didn't get the automatic one if you won the league but lost the tournament, and we made the NIT. And to be honest, I thought, wow, this may be as good as it gets. We've been invited to the NIT. So they set the standard. They built the level up. And then 06, 07, and 08, we were able to win our league and go to the NCAA tournament, which brought the Ian Clarks and Caron Johnsons and Mick Hedgepeth and the guys that had the next great round of NCAA tournament teams.
It is just amazing to think back through that whole building process. You go from guys like you described who are good, tough college players to guys who are now, you know, you got Ian Clark playing in the NBA. It's just an amazing arc. How many former players have reached out to you in one form or fashion as this process has gone on, going back through this period?
No, well, I mean, I've probably gotten texts or emails from double figures for sure since last night. And I think, Willie, I think you would understand this. I've gotten some texts over the years, sometimes right after their senior season, sometimes when they've gone over to play in Europe or somewhere internationally and seen a whole different culture around the basketball team. I've gotten texts from players that just didn't really know any other way besides the way our program was run until they got elsewhere. And the appreciation you get from those kids just makes me cry, but I cried a lot of things. So there's really not anything. You talk about the whatever's out there in social media, which I haven't seen from on Twitter about last night and from my peers. That's great, but there's nothing as good as what your former players think about their experience while they were playing at Belmont University. There's nothing better than that.
Rick, did you see Zion Williamson come out of his shoes the other night at the beginning of the game?
I did.
Have you ever seen a player just literally burst out of their shoe like that before?
Yeah, I have. I've seen it happen two or three times at least. Sometimes it's I mean we've worn Nikes forever, and they've been great shoes. I've got to believe that it's a 285-pound guy trying to stop and make a move, and it just was, the force was too much for maybe any shoe that's made, or maybe that one wasn't made quite as good as some others. They can't possibly have quality control as good on every single pair of shoes. So, but yeah, I've seen shoes split open several times. Seen it in practice, seen it in games. And have to go find some others for the guy to wear. I'm not out there in that world where I'm hearing, but just from the fringe, it seems like people are questioning the quality of Nike shoes, and I think that's a silly way to look at it.
Yep, interesting.
And I'm not getting paid. Okay, so.
You're not doing a Nike endorsement right now?
No.
Hey, congratulations on Win 800 last night. Best of luck the rest of the way. I know you guys have another home game tomorrow night at 5 o'clock. So good luck. Thanks for doing this.
You guys are nice to have me on. Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is Rick Bird, classy guy. Belmont basketball coach, and he did get it done with career Win 800. He would rather be asked about a losing streak and have to talk about tough questions than to talk about himself.
But it's just amazing.
You saw how uncomfortable he got just talking about himself.
But, you know, I go back. It's really remarkable what he's done. It's not just to get to 800, but how they do it. Right, as he mentioned, first of all, they have standards. They're going to win with good people. They're going to develop good people. And they're also going to play a style that, to me, is a fun style of basketball. You know, they pass. Sure. They move. It's a fun brand to watch.
They shoot threes.
Yeah. They have skill. But also, they went from NAIA to Division I, and they're winning 20 games every year. It's amazing. If you go back in time to that time when they changed, I don't think anybody was thinking, well, do you think Belmont could win 20 games a year as a Division I program? I don't know. Lipscomb sure was going to wait and see what was going on before they decided to go, but it didn't take very long.
There's news over on West End about Vanderbilt head football coach Derek Mason. We'll talk about that. We'll tell you what it is. And also there's news swirling about Matt Duchesne in Ottawa. We'll tell you what that's all about. All that next on Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Greg Wyshynski coming up at 11 o'clock to kick off the second hour of Darren and Donick. Let's start over on West End. I said there's news around Derek Mason, Vanderbilt head football coach. The news is he's received a contract extension. Vanderbilt has announced that today, just a little bit ago. They have extended him from 2 years to 5 years. He had 3 years remaining on his contract before the extension. And Malcolm Turner says that they have extended that out. So Derek Mason now has 5 years on his contract. And according to Adam Sparks of the Tennessean, remember Vanderbilt is a private university, so it's hard to find out how much they pay. But according to Adam Sparks' article, the most recent available university tax returns, Mason was paid $2.8 million in 2016, but his current salary is not available to the public because of what I just stated. It's a private institution. So Derek Mason getting an extension. He had 3 years remaining, and now it's pushed out to 5 years. So congrats to Derek Mason. Now, there's also news up in Ottawa. Well, there's news in Columbus. There's news in Ottawa. And all the national guys, and I'm reading from Elliot Friedman, but they're all weighing in. Aaron Portsline kind of got all this going, who's been covering the Blue Jackets for a long time, said word in Cleveland is that one of their big prospects was pulled off the ice during practice, could be headed to Ottawa. And Elliot Friedman says to Aaron Portsline's tweet, there's been traction on this. It looks like Columbus and Ottawa are working on a Matt Duchesne deal.
Ba-bum.
You know, we kept hearing, we had heard that before, but the Matt Duchesne thing to Columbus, I don't know. I guess they're doing this. If this happens, they're going to sign him to extension, right? I mean, Columbus is not looking for a rental. So that's interesting. Matt Duchesne to Columbus, and he signs an extension?
Elliot Friedman said this early in the week, that Nashville and Columbus were the two teams talking the most about Duchesne. And I kept thinking, well, all right, so from Columbus' standpoint, what does that mean? Here's what's interesting about Columbus. They could keep Bobrovsky, keep Panarin, and then do whatever they're going to do here at the deadline and still miss the playoffs. They're not... They, you know, we've assumed that they're going to make it, and that regardless, but right now they're below the line. Now they have a couple games in hand on Carolina, but Carolina has moved up above them right now. Now it's going to be a great race because Buffalo is kind of slipping. You know, they're still not done. Philadelphia has made a great run to get to this point, but now they've kind of sputtered a bit.
They've
the
dropped
last couple.
The last couple.
Yeah, you know, they can't just win every game. These teams aren't going to keep winning every single game. So Columbus is going to have a great chance of making the playoffs, but that's just making the playoffs. So this is really intriguing. I guess that would mean what? That they think maybe there's a chance that Duchesne would sign with them? And that would make it easier for them to trade Panarin?
Pierre LeBrun says Columbus has been on Matt Duchesne from the get-go, according to Pierre LeBrun.
Okay, but the question would be, as a rental or as a long-term? I'm guessing it's a long-term,
right?
Depends
on what they're giving up. I don't know. I mean, obviously, that's everybody's...
And would the idea be just to keep Panarin and Bobrovsky and just go with it? Just say, let's just load up and
remember,
go for it.
Ports line is saying... I'm assuming this prospect, this is top prospect, so they're talking about one of their higher-ups, if not the guy at the top of their prospect list. So it doesn't sound like it's Bobrovsky or Panarin. It sounds like it's their top prospect for Duchesne, right?
Well,
and probably
maybe more. I don't know. You know, and the more that I thought about it, and we talked about it backwards and forwards yesterday. Remember, we had the guy on from Ottawa. Mm-hmm. We talked about it a lot yesterday. All of the speculation about the prices that were being floated out there for Duchesne from Nashville, Tolvanen, a first and a player, I said it yesterday. It's too much to give away. Now, we'll see. If this actually goes, I'll be really curious to see what the price was and if Duchesne has agreed to a long-term deal with Columbus. Because I think that's what Columbus wants. They know they've got a lot of good players. A lot of good players. Even if they lose Panarin and Bobrovsky. They need guys to commit and upgrade so that they can get to the next step. But here's what I want to say up front, Darren. Don't panic, okay, if Columbus gets Duchesne, right? And then let's go to the next thing. What's everybody going to say? Oh, what if Winnipeg gets Stone and what if the Predators are going to do? Oh, my gosh. Well, let's wait and see. You never know how it's going to turn out. Nashville's going to do something here. But
are you sure? Are you positive?
Well, I think they're going to do something, yes.
You think they're going to do something?
Yeah, I think they're going to make a trade for another forward. But to me, it is not wave the white flag or let's not crown Winnipeg. If Winnipeg gets, let's say Columbus gets Duchesne, what's everybody going to say? Well, what if Winnipeg gets Stone? Then what's Nashville going to have?
Right.
I think there are other solutions. There are other things that won't cost you nearly what it will take. I'll be curious to see what the price would be for Stone, who a lot of people think is the best fit for both Winnipeg or Nashville, although Winnipeg is more in need of a center. They need the Stastny. That hole has not really been filled, even though Brian Little has played really well for them. Nashville's need is a little more of a pure winger. Mm-hmm. That's why Stone is probably the most attractive by a lot of the analysts, but of course his price tag is humongous, you would think. So it's interesting. But there are other solutions too. There are other guys out there that could help, but we'll have to wait and see.
According to Cap Friendly on Twitter, says the Blue Jackets currently have just over $6 million left in projected cap space for the rest of the way. There's 44 days left in the regular season. And if they trade for Matt Duchesne, that will account for about $1.4 million in cap space. So it's not that much the rest of the way. So still, of course, that's if that's all you're adding to your payroll. They're just saying, just simply adding Matt Duchesne with just over $6 million in cap space available the rest of the way, that would only count for $1.4 million toward Columbus's cap. We'll come back, wrap up the first hour of Darren and Donick next. Well, I got to be honest, it hasn't been a dull first hour, and it just keeps getting weirder by the minute. Here's the latest to add to the pile. So we have Derek Mason, Vanderbilt head football coach, with a contract extension, adding two more years. So now he's got 5 years left on his contract. This is with new AD Malcolm Turner. We had Rick Byrd on to talk about his career win 800 last night for Belmont. You've got all kinds of things swirling.
It's not swirling anymore.
Is it official? Because I've seen Senators closing in on a deal to send Matt Duchene to Columbus.
Darren Drager confirming Matt Duchene has been traded to Columbus. Details to come. Okay, Aaron Portsline, who is on it for Columbus. Duchene for prospects Abramoff and Davidson. Part of the deal. More coming. So let's see what the final price tag ends up. And the speculation is this is a rental. This is not with the commitment from Duchene past this season.
It's what it looks like.
Goodness. Loading the wagon. It does. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Craig Leopold in 2007 when he went and got Peter Forsberg, knowing in his own mind, now he didn't tell anybody, but in his own mind he was saying, this is it for me. I'm trying to win it. If we don't win it, I'm out. I'm going to sell, which is what he did.
Yes.
And then he forced David Poile to have to break down a lot of what he built, which was very unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Although David Poile did a masterful job of keeping the boat above water and eventually with the new ownership reloading to where they are now. But Columbus is saying, what the heck? Let's just bring it all in and let's take a shot.
I got to be honest. I have no idea what Columbus is doing. What are they doing?
I guess they can't find what they want.
They're trading for a rental? The Blue Jackets, what are you doing? Are they going to keep Bobrovsky and Panarin?
I think
and
so.
And go for it?
I think so.
Jeez.
Why would you trade them now if you're going to give up all that for Duchene?
You got me on this one.
That's nuts.
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton.
That is a bold strategy.
And then to add to the lunacy, the Jupiter Police down in Florida, their police chief, Daniel Kerr, has just put out there that New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft is being charged with soliciting prostitution
in Jupiter, Florida. What? That's some of the responses on Twitter. I have to say, we can't. One says deflate gate. One says, say what now? You know, there's just the smart alecky snickering, snarkiness. And of course, the Patriots haters are going to have a party now, aren't they? Oh, my God.
What in the world? Is this what the rest of the show is going to be? Then let's buckle up and let's have some fun.
Yeah, what next?
It may get bumpy, but jeez. In all seriousness, and we're going to talk to Greg Wyshynski to kick off the second hour, what does this mean with this deal? What does it mean for – look, there's only so many splash moves, especially let's just say Panarin is out.
I'm sorry. I got to read this. Peter Nygaard, Robert Kraft, first NFL owner with 7 rings. Six Super Bowl rings and now a prostitution ring.
Oh, boy.
Congratulations. The 7th ring. Oh, my God.
So are Nashville and Winnipeg set to just stand pat? Let's just say this move alone doesn't it eliminate 2 splash moves, right? Duchene and Panarin.
Off the board. They gone.
Well, there's only one more guy fits into the splash category.
I don't know.
Who's the other guy that does splash?
Nobody of the caliber of Stone. Stone is now the jewel.
Yes.
And the fact that they kept him out last night obviously means that they're showcasing him. He is on the block now. They are giving up the ship of any chance of signing him. But there's a second level of guys who wouldn't cost you as much that are still really good players that I think would be an upgrade, in my mind. So there's every hockey expert right now is going, ooh, Predators and Jets now make the play for Stone. And I'm sure that's going to happen, right? But both teams both know that it can't all be about this year. There is a season next year. Both teams are going to be really good again next year.
And you could get Duchene next year.
Duchesne's going to be on the market. Panarin's going to be on the market in the offseason, where you don't have to give up anything if you want to go for one of those guys. But there's other rentals, too, that I think could be the right fit.
This, to me, feels just like when we announced on the show as it happened. Justin Fields, the number one recruit in the country, is going to Georgia. What? Matt Duchesne is going to Columbus. They're going for it. What? The Blue Jackets are going for it. What are you doing?
If you're a Blue Jacket fan, are you excited about this?
For now.
Today you are, I guess, but we'll see how they get what exactly they have given up. It's coming out in bits and pieces. There's two prospects, which I don't know much about. I assume these are good prospects. Elliot Friedman has said no extension at this time. Ottawa would get an additional draft pick if Duchesne does end up signing with Columbus.
If you want to lighten up your day just to get a chuckle, and
just look at Twitter with,
just
the,
look
with
at Twitter
the Robert Kraft.
The Robert Kraft stuff.
The just, one after another.
It's material that writes itself.
Yeah.
But he's been arrested for soliciting prostitution in Jupiter, Florida. This is the owner of the New England Patriots. And on that note, that'll end hour number one. Who knows what's in store for hour number two, but you should hang out with us. That's next.